tsunami's back, bitches.
Took you long enough.
This has been an experience we will never forget.
This ain't no time to go all mushy.
Don't lecture me. I've waited long enough.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 443 of the Tsunami Escape Podcast. I'm C. Kohler, and with me tonight is Seda.
Hello.
Crocodile is taking this week off, so it's just going to be me and you. I'm looking at my notes here. I took a little bit more notes than I normally do. I don't know why. I think it's just there was a lot that happened in these episodes. So I'm going to very quickly go through the news. There's really only one item I had to mention, and then we can get right into it.
Yeah, sounds good.
They did show one new animated piece at the top of the block. I think it was during the first commercial break, a new animated Toonami bumper, which I don't think we'd seen before.
Yeah, it was just like a, I'm assuming they just had like a guest animator who likes to do these things for, you know, Toonami, just, you know, a quick, I don't know how long it was, maybe 30 seconds. It wasn't that long, but it was like Tom and Sarah on some like planet. Maybe like there was like a Stargate or something there. And then at the end, it showed like a giant Sarah. I saw some people mention it looked like Evangelion.
It was dark.
Yeah, there was a dark. Yeah.
It had like a dark tone to it. And I think it was like somebody was walking. It was like another character that was walking up and then walked up to where like a Tom was like sitting in like a throne or something. Yeah. It was kind of creepy, I thought. But it was cool. It was. That's basically it. We don't know yet anything about any block changes because, you know, we're still a couple of episodes away from the end of Don to Don. And then I think, you know.
So I know we'll get to this, and we always get to this. I think there's two more episodes of Don to Don, right? In the season.
Yeah.
I know there's more after that. And then there's two more episodes of Lazarus in the rerun slot. And I know it's just a rerun slot, but, you know, so pretty soon here, we'll have to know what they're doing with Don to Don, and I guess what they're doing with the rerun slot. So maybe next week we'll know.
Yeah. And five more of Daima, and that's Daima's our leading show. And there won't be more Daima after the five episodes that air there. They've got to do something there. So
this will be my guess going forward. Dr. Stone.
God, I so hope so.
I'm guessing one of these will be replaced. Dr. Stone. Like that feels like that's just kind of been waiting.
I'll tell you, man, I'm not going to say anything. I'm so desperate to talk about Dr. Stone. I will just tell you that the last three episodes of this most recent core, the second core, were like the best episodes of Dr. Stone ever.
So the last season is three separate cores, right?
Yeah.
So they just finished the second of the third of three.
Yeah, that happened last week, and then they announced that the third core will be premiering in 2026. Probably spring, judging by what they've done in the past. So there's going to be like, you know, until, you know, but maybe like 4 or 5 months before we get the final core. But yeah, they just finished the second core of it, and it was, man, I hope it comes to Toonami.
I've heard good things from people who are fans of the show, so.
Yeah, it's. I can't. I just have to stop talking because it's so good. And if you don't know what happens, it'll be so much more interesting to watch it live.
Something about space, but that's kind of what they teased, right? I don't know anything else. So,
all right. Well, let's move on to the block. And let's begin, of course, with Dragon Ball Daima. Dragon Ball Daima, episode 15, Third Eye. Like usual, I'm going to go through my quick rundown of the show, just the bullet points of what happens, not going into too much detail. And anytime you want to go into more detail, Seda, just stop me and I'll let you speak up.
Okay.
So the episode starts out with a big shootout between all of the gendarmerie and our Z fighters here. A big battle that's going on. Goma's throwing all his forces at him. And then we kind of learn that Goma's looking on a screen and he notices Hybus's belt, the one we saw like two or three episodes ago, where he's got that eyeball on it. And he freaks out and he's like, oh my gosh, is that it? Is that the legendary third eye? It turns out it is. And then he orders Goma, or Goma orders Degasu. It's like, you need to go get that right away. And then we kind of cut to a scene where the narrator just kind of comes in and he explains what this is. Basically, the third eye is this magical item that the demon kings would put on their forehead, and it would just basically power them up and made them super powerful. They would use them whenever they needed to, like, defend their position or defeat an enemy. And so basically we learned through this flashback as well that the, I don't know if he was the first demon king or like the previous demon king or whatever, two demon kings ago, demon king Abura was defeated by his son Dabura, because Dabura had stolen the eye from him so that his father couldn't use it to fight him. That's how Dabura became king.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised that Dabura didn't like take the eye for himself if it's so powerful, but instead he just like got rid of it. He's like, now no one will have it.
You know, I just had a thought though. Maybe it doesn't work if you aren't the king.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
First of all, the narrator even said, like, before he said all this, he's like, let me explain, like, literally just let me explain. But yeah, Dabura took the eye from his father, Abura, which allowed him to, like, usurp the throne, which is a little bit weird because, like, wouldn't the throne eventually have been yours anyway? But I guess he didn't take the eye for himself. He just had it gotten rid of. And even when it was, like, lost, I think he even mentioned something like, well, as long as it's out of the picture, it's fine. Like, he didn't even care. It's just like, as long as it's not here anymore.
Yeah. I'm double checking here. I'm going to make sure. I might be wrong about him being the son of Abura, but...
No, I think it did say it was his dad. I'm pretty sure it said that.
I
was curious, because at first I was like, wait, is Abura related to Dabura? And, like, it seems like it. Their names are similar. And then it even mentioned... I think I'm pretty sure there's some offhand narration that said it was. So,
yeah.
I'm sure you can go to Dragon Ball Wiki and just...
I used the evil AI and it came back and said that Dabura is the son of Abura. So I'm gonna assume it's probably correct. So
yeah.
So that's what we learn about what this thing was. Basically, it's not really, I'm not gonna go too much detail, but basically this little insect guy that was working for Dabura had stolen it, got away in like a flying ship, but the ship crashed, and then the bug guy got killed, and then that's why it was just laying in the forest somewhere when Hybus found it. So, all right, we come back from the commercial break and we do see Hybus again, and this very pretty Glynn woman walks up to him and she's like, oh, I love your belt, would you be willing to trade me? I could do anything. Or she's more like coming on to him. She's like, I'll give you anything, maybe a date, if you will, you know, give me that belt. And then Hybus is like, oh, I don't care, but I like your hat.
It's like a big, like, I don't know, it almost looks like a concoy for a dog, like one of those things.
Yeah,
like a big round pyramid hat thing.
It looked to me like a turd.
Or that too. Yeah, it does have that sort of like round conical like sort of, and it also like bounced a little bit, like it had some sort of like elastic like bounciness to it. And like, yeah, for some reason this girl had this hat and Hybus wanted it
by chance. Yeah, and she's like, what, for real? Okay, sure, here, take it. And she gets the belt. Now come on, we know this is Degasu, right? I mean, it's gotta be, I'm pretty sure.
Or someone, something, who knows? Like,
no, I think it is, because we hear their inner monologue and they're like, yeah, embarrassed. The girl is like, oh, I can't believe I went to such lengths to get this. So I'm like, right, pretty sure it's him. We cut away briefly for a moment to a scene that's completely pointless outside, I guess, to just let you know that Arinsu and her like two Majin Boos Doos Coos are just sort of sitting around waiting for the Dragon Balls to show up. So that's it. They're just sitting there, and she's just like, all right, any day now, I'll win. We come back to the big battle, and these big tanks, I called them Metal Slug tanks. They remind me of the tanks from Metal Slug. They come rolling up, and they start shooting things. It looks like things are going bad once these like cannons start coming in, because they're strong. But then King Kadan shows up in his stolen plane. I was not expecting this guy to actually be useful.
Yeah, so like the our Z fighters are actually like struggling a little bit against just the overwhelming forces, and like the weapons they have are, you know, even if you get hit by one of these like kind of beam bullets, they can paralyze. So they're actually like pretty dangerous. Normally, when if you have like a goon squad going up against the Z fighters, it's usually like they're no threat at all. But I guess here they actually were like, you know, they needed help. The Z fighters did, and they got it.
Yeah, he comes with his whole squad of people. I think we've seen these characters before briefly, but anyway, they all come flying out and they end up kicking ass and turning the tide of the battle.
Yep.
And towards the end of the episode, then we return back to Goma's throne room and we see Degasu come running, come walking up, and they have a brief conversation. But he doesn't mention to Goma that he got the eye.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that demon is Degasu himself or like an underling. Maybe the underling has like is just like a henchwoman. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be either way. But regardless, he gives like Goma a look like he's deliberately withholding it from him.
I saw someone in the thread mention, oh, this is how Goma becomes a threat, which kind of seems like plausible, like because Goma, as he is right now, like there's no way he seems like he's not threatening. But if he has the eye and gains like, you know, tremendous power, then maybe he would be. So because without it, he is just kind of a goofball.
I think that that's the impression I get what's going to happen. And also it feels to me a little bit like they should have set this eyeball. Technically they set it up earlier when it was just like a nothing thing, but like it's I don't know, it just seems like he's about to get a power up and it's like I don't know.
I think I saw Crocodile mention in the thread actually, like, I hope you guys are paying attention to the foreshadowing earlier, and like what I don't remember foreshadowing other than Tybus like pointed it out on his belt before. He's like, oh yeah, I got this eye on my belt, like he did point it out before. So but it wasn't like, as far as I remember, I don't remember mentioning of this powerful eye. Very possible I missed it.
No, I'm certain. It wasn't mentioned that the eyeball was mentioned, but we didn't know. It was just like a mysterious thing. Now we know what it is.
From what I remember, it was just like, it just happened to be on Hybus's belt. Like, oh yeah, this is my belt and it's got an eye on it. It was like, well, that's weird. So
that's what I'm saying. It's a very loose sort of foreshadowing, because it's like we've introduced this mysterious object, but now it's going to turn out to be like probably an end game thing, which is interesting to me, because if your final boss of this story is going to require this power up that's explained in like an episode or two before he gets it, I'm just sort of like,
with literally the narrator jumping in saying, "Let me explain."
Yeah.
So feels not very organic.
Right. It felt a little forced to me. It's like, well, we need to find something that will make Goma strong. I think next episode they're going to fight the Ginyu Force guys.
Yeah, which the episode preview looked like it was pretty much just Vegeta clowning on them. And we'll see if there's any like twist to that, or if it's just as straightforward as you might expect. Who knows? Usually, it feels like with these sort of like, I don't know, gimmick fights, they're usually like maybe dangerous in an unexpected way. But who knows? I don't know.
Yeah, for all we know, they'll like combine into like a super monster or something. They haven't shown that. You know what I mean? Or you're right. It could just be a comedy episode where they all get beat.
Yeah, I have no idea.
Yeah. Overall, I thought this episode was fine. It didn't do anything amazing for me. I will say I thought the scene with the trade with Hybus was kind of fun. And, you know, like I said, my only real beef with the episode is that it feels like the third eye power up being a power up for Goma. It seems like it's kind of a little ham fisted shoved in here, but, yeah, overall it was fine. I mean, I will say I was kind of bored with the fights in this episode. there wasn't anything really good about them. They were just sort of like a lot of people shooting and dodging. And they just, like you said, they make a point about the fact that the guns are actually dangerous to the Z fighters, but yeah, it didn't really feel like it. They just sort of would take hits from time to time. So I don't know. It was okay.
No, I remember even when I was watching it, I was like, this battle isn't as like visually interesting or really anything about like the choreography or the setting or anything about it wasn't as interesting as other fights. And even like we've had Goku just kind of taking out random mooks before, but those were still, I think, more like visually appealing. And this one just kind of wasn't. So,
yeah, they were fine. Seems like they were trying to set up like, oh, this is a huge battle. And it's just sort of like, well, yeah, but if they're against a bunch of nobodies, I don't really feel like there's any tension there. So, I mean, it was neat to see King Kidan and his guy kind of show up, but that only made it even more to me like, okay, well, we just had to get this over with, you know, this battle's not very interesting. I wonder how long they're going to stick around now that they're here. Any other thoughts about this episode?
No, I don't think so.
Like I said, for me, pretty average episode. It was fine, but nothing to write home about.
Yeah. Now we enter the final fourth, the last five episodes of the series. So
if it's true to, I guess, prior Dragon Ball series, although I guess this was very different, but if it had anything to share with those prior Dragon Ball series, I would assume the Goma fight would take several episodes.
Yeah, so we have five episodes to, like, well, we know one of them is pretty much just take out the Ginyu Force. That's like an episode, the Great Value Ginyu Force. And then I guess there has to be an episode with, like, Irensu and the Majin, like Ku and Do. Like, okay, that's got to be an episode. And then that leaves maybe more than one episode. And then we have like probably two with Goma, like at least two. And then maybe like a final, I don't know, like that's four episodes. And maybe some sort of like cool down epilogue finale. I don't know. But yeah, you know, we have like three things left at least to take care of. I guess we have the Ginyu Force. We have Irensu and everything she's about. And then Goma. So. Yeah. Yeah, five episodes to do that.
All right. Well, let's move on to Dandadan. Dandadan, episode 10. Have you ever seen a cattle mutilation? So this episode started out really weird. For a moment there, I didn't know what was going on. We see this sort of naughty nurse. She's got one of those like little whip things in her hand. And her name is School Nurse Queen. Or they call her Queen Sensei. So she's the school nurse. And Okurun, Momo, and Ira are there. You know, they've gotten clothes on now. Or like borrowed clothes. I guess they're like gym clothes.
Yeah, it's like they just had spare gym clothes. So
yeah, and she's kind of giving them a hard time, like, oh, what were you up to or whatever. And then some guy like comes in and tries to interrupt them, and she goes into the other room and says, I gotta take care of this first, and starts whipping on them and stuff. And it's like she's like some weirdo.
Yeah, so I don't think this, my impression is, I don't think this school nurse character is like a main character. They're just like a side character that's trying to, that has like a very obvious, evident outward gimmick, which is that of like a seductress, sadistic type, which is kind of weird. She's kind of a mix between like a nurse and a counselor. And I don't know exactly how it works in Japanese schools, but someone pointed out that like she was sitting there in her like chair with like one leg crossed over the other in a very like imposing pose. And then like her uniform, her badge was also on the screen showing her name, Queen Sensei, and her photo on the badge, like her profile photo, was like the exact same pose. Like she posed like that for the photo. Like one, you know what I mean? Like the one leg crossed over the other.
Yeah.
With the whip in hand. But yeah, so she's kind of like, this is kind of, she seems like a gimmick character, kind of fun. Yeah. Like, okay, she's sadistic. She's kind of naughty, kind of seductress type. I don't know where you want to put that, but
I get, don't take it too seriously. More like a joke character, I think.
Yeah.
That's my take on it. Yeah.
just kind of like a side, I think more very kind of speaking broadly here, one way to make a side character more memorable is just to give them like a very exaggerated gimmick. Like, oh yeah, that's the nurse character. That's just what she's like, you know, mm-hmm. just it's kind of since she is a side character and not like we don't care about her believability really. Like she's not like a character we're going to be discussing her character growth or development or whatever. They're just going to have a side character with a very exaggerated gimmick. That's all. That's what it is to me.
So after she leaves, Okarun, Momo, and Ira have a conversation where Momo comes to this idea about what might be going on. And I'm just going to give you the short version because the scene goes on for like 3 or 4 minutes. But basically, his theory is that yokai are super powerful and that they're defending Earth from aliens. And that the aliens are wanting to attack Earth, but the yokai are preventing that. But the aliens also know that humans can take the powers of yokai, so that's why they're after them. That's why they're after Okarun and Ira, is they want the yokai power so that they can study them to find a way to defeat the yokai.
It's kind of this amusing scene where Okarun's got like a blackboard and he's writing all over it, and then he like flips it over and he's got more on the back while Ira and Momo are just kind of losing interest.
So. Yeah, there was a funny bit like... I love the way, I'm not going to do it justice, but like Momo was just like, oh my God, I wasn't paying attention at all. It sounded like what you said was really important.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Like feigning enthusiasm.
Ira's really concerned about her
image. Like, you know, she's popular. She's wondering what people think of her now.
Yeah. So she says that, you know, I'm going to have to blame this on you, Momo. And then Momo's kind of like, I don't care. So mm-hmm. You can just blame it on me. I don't really care about that stuff. And Ira's kind of like, she's kind of being like a bit like her normal self here, her outward self, where she's sort of like, well, I'm just going to pin this on you, bitch. And then she leaves. But when she gets back to her classroom, all her like devotees are huddling around her desk. And she's like, what happened to you? And then that's when she kind of goes into her character and she's like, oh my God, it was awful. Everything was terrible. And she has this really funny grin on her face. I love the look, the way they drew her face, because she's like sinister, like, but then somebody in the class says, oh, it was that Momo. She's terrible. And then Ira can't resist being like, oh no, it wasn't her fault.
Yeah. She immediately realizes you didn't say this, but I know you know this. Like, so the other characters kind of immediately start gossiping. Like, Momo did this. We have to, you know, get back. We have to get back at her. Blah blah blah. It's her fault, and we need to, you know, who knows what they're gonna do? But Ira immediately realizes, oh wait, I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to get Momo hurt or insulted or harassed or mm-hmm. bullied or whatever. So she immediately confesses, like, nope, that was me, and then she leaves. But we did skip a scene though.
Yeah, we did. So go ahead.
Roughly around the time that when Ira leaves, I think, Momo's friends come to the nurse's office and they're trying to figure out what's going on. And they basically boil it down to it's a love triangle. And it's very humorously done. I don't know the friends' names. There's like the dark skin.
I got them right here. I just looked them up. It's Miko and Muko.
Okay. Is Muko the dark skin one?
You know what? I don't know. I'm looking them, double checking, but I don't know.
I know dark skin characters in anime have like a trope or an archetype. They're called like Gyaru or whatever type
character. Yeah, that's what she is. I mean, they might technically both be, but yeah, the one with the tan and the ponytails, it's more than an archetype. It's like a fashion style in Japan.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they are oftentimes, at least in my experience, kind of given like a valley girl accent in English. Like, obviously they don't have valley accents in Japanese, but that seems like what oftentimes is considered like an equivalent type of like way of speaking for those characters. And I noticed that one of the characters does speak like a valley girl in the dub, so that seems like, you know, kind of like how oftentimes they give like the country accent to what is it called in Japan?
Oh, Osaka.
The people who live away from Tokyo. Yeah, they kind of give them like a country drawl. And I know like Gyaru characters, they oftentimes give like a like a valley girl, and one of them does. Anyways, that was just something I noticed. It was really evident in this episode. But the other girl, Miku or Moku or whatever, is kind of going through this pretty humorous, kind of like almost like a detective revealing their conclusion about like, and so this must only be explained by a love triangle and so on and so forth. And it's obviously a very silly scene, a very fun, amusing kind of dorky scene, but it's just an fun, entertaining moment. Yeah.
Yeah. It's fun. Also, one other quick thing I want to mention that happened too during that segment is that Okarun finally admitted what was going on to Momo about when he got caught with her, with Ira on the ground. And he mentions that he basically says, I wanted to work out because I wanted to look cool to you, Momo. And for a moment, he's like, I'm going to tell you. And then she kind of has a moment of where she's kind of like ribbing him about it. And he's like, what?
Yeah, he basically refuses to say he has a crush on her or admit anything. He's just like, well, I'm a guy. And that's what guys do.
Yeah.
Like, he basically says it without saying it. Like, I want to impress you.
So they walk outside the room, but they don't get but 20 feet when suddenly that crab / shrimp / Dover demon alien guy returns.
You missed the scene again. So I'm trying to remember exactly what happened. Okarun just goes back to the classroom. Ira, after she basically admits that she made up those rumors, she goes out to like somewhere in the courtyard, just on a bench somewhere. And then Momo kind of meets her there. And they have a discussion, Momo and Ira, basically about, I'm actually trying to remember specifically what they talked about, but moving their relationship along. And Momo asks her, like, why aren't your friends here? And blah, blah, blah. And they're ones who first see that mantis shrimp after they're talking to each other.
That's right.
I almost feel bad because I don't quite remember what they were talking about specifically.
It was basically what you said. It was just like, Momo's kind of like, where's your entourage?
I don't think Ira actually confesses to Momo that she spread those rumors about her, though. Like, not to her face. I don't think she did.
No, I don't think so either.
Momo herself hasn't even really commented on these rumors at all.
Well, she doesn't care. That's the impression I get.
Yeah.
She's that kind of personality that she just doesn't care.
Say whatever you want about me. It's not true. Yeah. I know it's not true, so it doesn't matter.
Yeah, sticks and stones, that kind of thing. Yeah. So anyway, like I said, this alien shows up. He's ready to fight, but he's wheezing and dripping. He's got like white stuff all over him, and he's just not looking real good. And we even see like a brief flashback in his head where we see his family, and he has like a child, and they're like calling out to them, daddy, daddy, and all this other stuff. And then he kind of passes out, and then he wakes up and he's back at Seiko's place with everyone else, and they've got him all bandaged up, and he sits up and to his surprise that they've kind of like, for a moment, I think he thinks he's captured or something, but they're trying to feed him food.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when we go to commercial break. Now, before we continue, I just got to say, most of the rest of this episode revolves around this guy, and I did not expect this guy to come back.
I did not.
Yeah, it's kind of surprising. They make him a character. So we come back. My note says everyone is feast fighting. Everyone's eating and yelling and screaming at each other. This seems to be a common thing. It happens after every big battle.
Yeah.
And then the shrimp guy kind of explains his situation. He's complaining about the fact that, well, not complaining, but he's really worried because his son needs blood transfusions and he has to pay for it. He needs money. This is why he's run. That's why he's a,
he's like a mercenary for hire or whatever.
Right. Yes, exactly. Yeah. He's doing whatever he can to raise money for his poor family. Okarun has a suggestion. He's like, well, here, he's such a good guy. He's like, why don't you just take my junk? Maybe you can sell it, you know? And then Momo's like, what?
There's some amusing conversations here. We're like, how much do you think your junk is worth?
Yeah. But then Seiko kind of makes an odd response. And she's like, what? How does she figure it out? I forget
exactly, but also there was a slight moment in this episode, not a slight moment, but there was also a moment when, I forget if this is before or after the milk thing, but the alien shrimp dude is talking to them And he like learned the characters' names. And what is it? He actually calls Okarun Ken Takakura. And as soon as he says that, yes. Momo like heals over and just like freaks out. Like she can't handle it.
She hides her face.
And they're all sitting there kind of like on their knees, like they do on their mats. And then as soon as he says like Ken Takakura, and he's not even talking to Momo, he's talking to Ken. But she just like keels over onto her back and like starts freaking out. Like even just the mere mention of that name, she can't handle it. So,
yeah, it really does affect her.
I think Seiko just says like, hey, I have an idea. Try this. Here's the milk.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Try this milk. Drink this milk. And he's like, oh, my God, it's blood. And she's like, oh, yeah. When you walked in here, I could just when I was bandaging you up, you smelled like milk to me. Dried milk. And it's like turns out that cow's milk is the same as this alien's blood. So this is the blood that he can use to save his child. So he gets into his UFO, which funny enough has big stalk eyes sticking out the top of his UFO, and he abducts a cow. So this is how he's going to get his the blood he needs for his son. By the way, I wrote it here in my notes too. Everything this guy says, he always ends with the word Deej. I don't know what that's about. It's just like, I don't even know if that means anything. Just Deej.
I don't either.
He's like, can you help me, Deej? Anyway, yeah. So this is what cow abductions are. Yeah. Some aliens need cows for blood.
And I have two comments. One, apparent people in the thread were saying in the manga, the spaceship basically looked like a Millennium Falcon. So in the anime, going with like the more UFO saucer with the stalk eyes, I guess was like the anime interpretation of it, because they couldn't just do a Millennium Falcon, right?
Yeah.
But that was an anime kind of adjustment. But two, this is in the opening. There actually is a part in the opening showing a saucer picking up a cow.
Yeah, that was the opening so far. I think may have shown everything that's happened to this point.
Yeah, yeah.
So. All the aliens are all of the main enemies and everything have all been shown at this point.
The ending of the opening looks like it shows four characters getting like tractor beamed up or something. So I wonder if that's how this season ends. Speaking of four characters, we don't have four characters yet.
Yeah, we'll get to that in a second. He shows up at the last scene. Before that, though, one other thing I forgot to mention too, that during this whole time before the guy leaves in his UFO, Seiko just does not believe that he's an alien and just keeps saying, oh, he looks like a Kappa. That guy's just a Kappa. Even when he leaves, and it's even when Seiko sees the UFO take off and zoom off into space, and Momo's like, don't you believe in aliens now? And he's like, nah, I still think he's a Kappa.
And also, just this isn't like that revelatory or anything, but like when the alien spaceship is there and it's showing the four of them, like looking at the spaceship, you know, everyone's kind of like got, you know, beady eyes or whatever looking at the ship. But like Okarun, if you look at his animation specifically, he's of course like freaking out because, you know, aliens are his whole thing. And he's seeing a real life like UFO saucer. And I think he's even like muttering to himself this whole time, like, holy shit, it's an alien, blah, 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 blah. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. So yeah, he takes off. And he did his vow that he says, if you ever need me, I'll be back. So he's probably going to come back, I think.
Store that in the memory bank for later.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I don't think they would go to the trouble of mentioning that unless it was going to happen. So so maybe a new ally. I don't know. They go back to Seiko's and everyone's begging because they lost their uniforms during the big battle and now they need new ones and they know Seiko's got money and she starts like forcing Momo to do a goofy impression in order to like, you know, get the funds for it.
Yeah. I don't know who this character is. I'm assuming this character she's, trying to do an impression of is some popular Japanese. I don't know. Like, you know, when we talk about like English impressions, like an Arnold Schwarzenegger impression, is just like a very obvious voice that everyone knows, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm assuming if there's some Japanese equivalent of that, just like some celebrity that any Japanese person would know. I don't know who this is or what this is. So.
That's exactly what I see. It's the same as the Ken Takakura thing. Like I didn't know who he was until I looked it up. I think it's the same thing. Psycho's like, she's willing to buy Okaroon's and Ira's uniform, but she won't buy Momo's because she knows that Momo's just trying to rip her off or whatever, or use her money. So she makes her do this impression. She goes, and someone knocks at the door, and she's like, keep doing the impression and answer the door with the impression. So she does. She goes and answers the door with the goofy impression. But she stops when she sees this young man arriving at the door, and his name is Gigi. And it's explained in that moment that when Seiko explains that Gigi was Momo's childhood best friend and her first crush, which, of course, leaves Okaroon stunned.
Yeah, this is Okaroon's kind of, like, we it was obvious this is where it was going, but this is his most outward, I guess, display yet that, yeah, he's got a crush on Momo, because the very mention of another crush, he's like starting to freak out. He's like, what? No way. Like, I got competition now.
Yeah, this is one of those shows wasn't expecting it to go here. I should have, but like, we're getting kind of multiple triangles going on, you know? So we've got the Ira. And Ira and Momo for Okaroon, and now we've got potentially Gigi and Okaroon for Momo.
And no one likes Ira. I'm joking.
I think everyone likes Ira. It's just none of them are named characters. That's the other.
I mean, if I had to guess, like, having a two males and two females character and having them like pair up is pretty common. So maybe Gigi and Ira will end up, you know, having a spark. In the preview for the next episode, we don't see a whole lot, but I think the preview basically just shows, like, Momo's like, well, why is Gigi living with us now? And Gigi mentioned something. He's like, well, I've been seeing spirits recently, so we don't know why yet, but that's why he's there, is he's starting to see or get some sort of supernatural, you know, perception of some sort. So
yeah, and this is episode 10, which means we have two more episodes, and I'm assuming both of those are probably going to cover Gigi's sort of introduction.
And we already know that, and I kind of expected it, like, this core, I guess they are calling it a season. This season ends in some sort of cliffhanger before season two. It's the sort of thing where, like, when this show was first announced, I think they announced it was going to be like the second season wasn't a question. That was always going to happen. So they knew they could do a, when they were creating the show, they knew they could do a cliffhanger ending here, and then they could continue it up in the next season. So yeah, I'm expecting the cliffhanger ending at the end of episode 12. Then we have a whole second season that we'll maybe eventually get. I don't expect it right away. And then they did announce a third season too. So
yeah,
that's probably a ways away yet though.
So overall, this was a really good episode. It was more about just sort of tying up the knots of this most recent adventure that they went on with the school. And kind of setting up potentially a new character, two new characters, I guess. Well, obviously Gigi's a new character, but even this like weird alien guy, because they went through the trouble of giving him a backstory and everything. So I'm assuming, you know, he may come back in the future. But yeah, it's just sort of a fun episode where they kind of, you know, everyone gets back on the same level playing field. Even though Momo and Ira still are bickering with each other, they do seem a little softer now than they were before. At least not to each other, but behind their backs. So, yeah.
And I expect the last two episodes, I expect the next episode in the last episode to be, you know, kind of the final arc of this season.
What do you mean?
Like, I expect episode 11 to introduce some new conflict of some sort. That'll lead into episode 12. Gigi is now involved. And then I expect it to end on a cliffhanger. So. And then it'll probably be resolved in season two.
Well, the pattern so far has been yokai monster that we have to defeat for a character. So I'm going to assume maybe that's, you know, because Gigi's saying he's seeing things. So
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe it's something like that. I don't know. Any other thoughts? I mean, did you like this episode? Did you not like this episode?
I liked it. Like, obviously the last couple of episodes with the aliens and the Nessie and all that were pretty high action, you know, everything going on all at once sort of thing. So this is more of a cool down episode, you know, some goofy moments with like the other characters and some character development here with Ira specifically, you know, so kind of a nice breather episode before we get to the finale of the season.
Yep. Okay. Well, let's move on to Bleach. Bleach, The Thousand Year Blood War, Core 2, Episode 5. Rages at Ringside. Okay, quick rundown. We hear that the Soul Reapers are down to only 30% of their effective use. Or they're down. They're either down to 30% or they're out 30%. I forget which.
I think they said down to 30%. So 30% remaining.
30% remaining. So they're not doing so hot. And the main guy calls everybody on their cell phones, is like, okay, everybody go to these designated places. We need to regroup and, heal up and stuff. And we cut back to Kensai and Rojiro, who have just arrived to fight Mask, because the other guys were, taken out. I think, I forget which one it was. I think it was Kensai who's like really bickering about the fact that his lieutenants were defeated so easily against this goofy looking wrestler. James, the little guy, is nearby and he's rooting for Mask. And then I think Kensai is just like, shut up, and just like cuts him in half.
Yep.
And then,
during all this, Kensai, he's got like his Bankai, which is sort of like, I don't know, it's like a punch, but then he like there's like a vibration element to it where he's like, I can like hit you with my fist with a weapon attached to it, and then it like does like a series of like high power rapid punches or whatever, and this is like his Bankai, and it seems to work at first, like Mask is knocked out, but then like James, this little old, this small old guy kid thing who's out on the sideline, like whenever he calls Mask the Masculine like a superstar, he like gets a power up, so yeah. That catches Kensai off guard, and I forget exactly what happens, but Kensai basically gets beat up and knocked out because he thinks he took out the Mask guy, but he didn't actually.
Yeah. And then Rojiro steps up, starts to attack him using his crazy dance troupe Bankai,
and explaining every second of it.
Yeah, they've been doing this for like 3 or 4 episodes in a row now. Everybody's, and this is—I know this is a Bleach thing, but I'm just like, it's funny to see it in action where they're just like, "Now let me talk to you for 30 seconds about how my Bankai works." And he's, he's having like them all dance around him, and then water appears, and the guy's like, "Where's all this water coming from?" And it's like, "Oh, it's just part of the dance."
And Master Mask is actually like relatively resourceful, if that's the right word here, where he's like, he kind of realizes, oh, if the power of this Bankai is like this kind of like musical dance thing, I'm just gonna blow out my eardrums, and if I can't hear it, it doesn't work, apparently.
Yeah, so he just sticks his fingers right in his ear.
Yeah,
it's pretty gruesome.
Yeah, and then he shoots Rojiro with like a star. He literally puts like a star-shaped like hole in his chest. And he dies. He's not dead.
Yeah, apparently he has a move called Star Flash, and it's like on Master Masculine's head, he has a star, and when like James roots for him, he shoots a star beam out of his head, and then you're right, it just like goes right through Rojiro. Rojiro's down, and before Master Masculine has a moment to even, gloat, suddenly Rukia and Renji arrive. We come back from the commercial break, and Renji's like, I'll take care of this loser. Rukia, you take the two captains and get them some help. And while this is happening, we see James in the background, and he starts multiplying, like little tiny versions of him start crawling out of his mouth.
Yeah, so like Renji cuts off, he's already James, which is such a funny name, that there's all the names in this show, just James. I'm assuming that's the point, right? But he's already cut in half. But he's still alive. It's just his upper body and torso and head. Renji like cuts off his head and, just thinks, well, that's the end of that. His head's cut off now. But no, like shortly after, as you just were about to say, his head, like his mouth of his head opens up, and there's like smaller, more James crawling out of it. Like very, very, very creepy.
Yeah. And they all have like high squeaky voices, and they're like, you're a superstar. You're a superstar. And when this happens, this really powers up Master Masculine. He gets super powerful. He starts doing all kinds of crazy moves. He flies up into the air. He starts saying, star, 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 like that really fast.
I like how Renji mentions also like, why did your mask change color?
Yes.
Just kind of nonchalantly. And someone in the thread mentioned, like, kind of jokingly, like, don't make fun of luchador culture, which I guess this is like a luchador thing where, you know, they have like different colored masks that might indicate, you know, something. I don't know. But yeah, he's got like, he ends up with like a, he had like a yellow and red mask and it turns into like a black and red mask, which is, I guess, more powerful. So
he flies up into the air and he's going to do this superstar supernova attack, which is going to like flatten the ground under him in the star shape. In doing so, he's actually going to quote unquote kill the James that are under him. And he's like, he even kind of like just says like, don't worry, you will come back because as long as a superstar exists, so will you. And he crushes them. And then we kind of get a quick flashback to Renji learning about his new Bankai because he's talking to that Squad Zero guy.
Yeah, like Renji already had a Bankai, but this is just sort of just like just hand waving, like, actually, that wasn't like his full power Bankai. That was only half of it. So it's just, it feels like just kind of a flimsy explanation to give Renji another power up. Cause you can't, he already had a Bankai. So it's like, well, here's actually the better version of it now. Sure. Whatever. Why not?
The funny part about to that to me was like, that's not its name. That's only half its name. Its full name is this. And he says the longer version. And then Renji's like, well, how would you know that? Or how do you know that? He's like, I literally came up with these things. That's what the guy says. He's like, I invented the word Bankai.
And Shikai and whatever.
Yeah. So it's kind of funny. But so he breaks out his new fully formed Bankai, does these crazy new attacks. We get an insert song that plays during this, which is kind of hype. I'm not going to lie. Takes down Master Masculine and wins. And then the final scene, we cut back to Yuha Vaha sitting in his throne. He's realized that Master Masculine has been defeated. Although he doesn't, he then's going to summon the power of that person back to him, but he doesn't say Master Masculine. He says, James, return to me.
Yeah.
That's weird.
I think he says like James has been defeated.
Yeah. Huh.
I saw people talking in the thread that like you assume like James was the actual like, you know, user or if you will. Well, it's like who knows how it works with the Quincy, but like James was the actual Quincy and Master Mask was like his just power.
Yes.
So like Master Mask wasn't like an actual Quincy. He was just like the manifestation of James's Quincy power or something like that. So, you know, this sort of thing has been seen before where like the user, like the puppet master is kind of hidden. But it's kind of an interesting little twist that this little weird old guy kid named James was the real Quincy.
It doesn't make sense to me, though, because like he killed himself then.
Yeah.
At the end of the battle. So I don't know. Now, but that's what he said.
If Master Mask was not defeated by Renji, would James have come back eventually? It was like because they were defeated at like the same time.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't.
So whatever it is, he was defeated, and yeah, like Yuha Vaha like calls James's essence back to him, and then he's like has a brief conversation where he's like, or no, wait, it's a Uryu is talking to the other head Quincy guy, and they're like, oh yeah, Yuha Vaha gets his, you know, he's the source of all Quincy's and you're wondering how he can pull other Quincy's into himself. Well, let me tell you about where Yuha Vaha came from. So that's going to be the next episode, I think.
Yep.
Explaining his origin.
Yeah. More lore. I was trying to look up what that other guy's name is.
Oh yeah.
I got it here. Jugram Hotwalt. I'm going to put it. You can try saying this.
Yeah, let me see. Yeah, that's what you said. Jugram Hotwalt.
I remember them saying Hotwalt in the show. It's hard to say without Hoshwalt. Practice.
I'll tell you, Hotwalt's easier to say than Jugram. So Hotwalt, he was the guy who thought he was going to be the successor of Yuha Vaha, but turns out gave that to Uryu.
Yeah.
That was the episode. Honestly, I didn't really care for this episode too much. It was okay, but like the Master Mask character is just a joke to me. I don't take it And it's not to say that like a joke character like this couldn't be fun, but I didn't really find him all that entertaining. It was cool to see Rukia and Renji show up, though. I like that.
I think more people have attachment to Rukia than Renji for obvious reasons. Like, there's literally a whole arc in the show, which is Rescue Rukia. Like, it's the second arc of the show. And there's like, she's got a lot more going for her as a character than Renji does. So I'm kind of curious. First of all, like, Rukia shows up in like this, it almost looks like a snow outfit of some sort with like the woolly hat with the ear flaps and like the goggles. She's got like the ski mask goggles and like a coat. Like, it's kind of a weird, kind of an interesting setup that we're like, what is she wearing? Because that's not normally what she wears. I'm kind of curious to see like what she does. I'm more interested in what she does than what Renji does, to be honest.
I'm going to be honest with you. I feel like they're sidelining her.
Yeah.
At this point. Does she get to do something? Yeah, maybe not. I mean, she returns and their first duty is to go be a nurse.
Yeah, at least Renji's fight with Master Masculine, I don't know. He got away better than Sakim the dog guy did with Bambietta, where he basically gave up his life for that fight. Like, you know.
Yeah.
You took out a mini mini boss, but in exchange you gave up your humanity. You are now a wolf. How many do we have that many? How many Quincy underlings do we have left? Like, I'm trying to remember if there's many that we've seen. Like, there's still the flame guys floating around. Yeah,
there was like a big table of them we saw once, and I don't think we've seen some of those guys yet.
Yeah. I remember there was if you remember several episodes ago now, there was like the one Quincy that took out Byakuya way back when, and he had like the long hair and kind of like he had his mouth covered, and he had this like thing where he had like this shield around his body that Byakuya couldn't break. So he's still around. I think it's a he. His gender is kind of
And I mean all the Bambi characters, they're going to have something to do probably at some point.
Yeah, because they haven't done anything. So
yeah, and I mean we haven't really had a fight with the Hoshwalt guy. He's just sort of doing exposition. Well,
he broke Ichigo's sword with no effort before, so he seems pretty dangerous. So,
no, I think there's probably a number of them yet to be revealed. And I mean, this is a multi-core show.
Yeah, we're in
our multi-core final season. I don't know how many they're going to be, but like, they're going to have a lot of them for this to go on and on. I think so.
I was just trying to remember how many we have left. We took out. We're done with a few of them, but there's still more to go.
I could risk looking it up, like how many there are.
Nah, don't worry about it.
All right. Any other thoughts about this episode? What did you think?
Yeah, kind of. I always feel this way with these sorts of like side character versus side character battles, where it's just kind of, you know, like, okay, yeah, we need something for all these characters to do. So we're getting all these sort of one-on-one matchups. And okay, here was Renji versus Master Masculine. Renji got his moment. Master Masculine's out of the picture now, so that's kind of like check it off the list. And now we got to go to the next one. It kind of feels like a checklist to me, where it's just kind of like, yep, we have to go down the list, giving each character their moment, knocking off each villain off the table, and then we'll end up ultimately with Ichigo versus Yuhabaha, of course. But we just gotta kind of go down the list before that happens and see if there's any wrinkles that appear that make that less straightforward than it seems like it's going to be. But I always kind of feel that way during these kind of moments and arcs in Bleach arcs, especially, where it's just kind of, there's just kind of these, all these different battles that you got to get off the list.
I will say that sometimes they can be fun though. Like, they don't always have to be like checklisty. Sometimes you could be looking forward to one because you like the character or you think the character's fun. But I don't know I'm not feeling that right now, especially not with Master Masculine. He was just sort of, to me, he's like, he's ridiculous. So I'm not like excited to see him fight. I guess if you were big into luchador wrestling, you might have thought this was really cool. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But all right. Yeah, it was okay, but nothing amazing. I think I'm more interested to see what the deal is with Yuhabaha next week. So, okay. Well, let's move on then to Blue Exorcist.
Just
Blue Exorcist Shimane Illuminati Arc, Episode 6. I can't rely on anyone, says Izumo. And now in this episode, we will learn why. This is a pretty dark episode.
Yeah, first thing first, this episode is heavy.
Yeah.
Like, really heavy emotions here.
So we start out, this is basically all about Izumo's past. So we learn when Izumo was like 11-year-old. She was living with her mom, who was the chief priestess, who was kind of a goofball. She was fun, but scatterbrained, boy hungry, looking for her husband, that kind of thing. But overall, very loving and nice, doted over her two daughters. And at this point, Izumo's okay with her mom. She thinks her mom's a little bit of a goof. She's not upset with her or anything. She's not mad at her.
Yeah, this episode starts off kind of lighthearted, where it seems like her mom, whose name is Tamamo, which is a very fitting name for a fox spirit guardian, because of I'm not super familiar with this. Someone did point this out in the chat also. Like, Tamamo no Mei is like a very famous like legend of basically about like the nine-tailed fox in Japan. So someone made a joke like, well, if you name your daughter Tamamo, like, you're just asking for it. But like, I remember, so she has daughters. She has two daughters, but she's seemingly not married. Like, this is more her boyfriend than like her husband. And Izumo's dad is not even like in the picture. And there's kind of a slightly joking part at the very beginning of the episode where Izumo's mom is asking Izumo for like boy advice. And Izumo even mentions, like, I'm your daughter. How are you asking me about boy advice? Like, this seems kind of awkward. It turns pretty quickly, though. We'll get to this. But, like,
yeah,
Izumo's dad kind of sucks. And is arguably all of this is his fault.
Exactly. It is. Yeah, we'll get to that. But before we do learn a little bit about the... what's Izumo's last name?
Tamaki.
Tamaki. We learn about the Tamaki family. So the Tamaki family have been charged with keeping this nine-tailed fox sealed in this special stone called the Killing Stone. And because they're great masters of fox demons. We even see Izumo's mom at home sort of like just commanding a whole troop of fox demons to do the laundry and clean up the house and stuff like that. That's how powerful she is.
Yep.
And this kind of runs in the family, obviously. We knew this. We talked about this last week, but but it turns out that everyone else in the village doesn't really like Izumo and her little sister Tsukumo. And we kind of learn that in a minute about why, but it's partly because they're fearful of their powers of being the channels for the fox demons, but we also learn that they are illegitimate children. Or maybe it's not that they not know that, actually. I don't think they know that. I think it's more that they're just like the vessels for these foxes, and they're a little.
Well, I think there is a little bit of an angle of like illegitimacy, though, too.
Okay.
Like I don't know. I don't know if they know precisely like who their dad is, if that's just common knowledge or not. But right. it seems like Tamamo isn't married. This isn't like a shrine endorsed. Like relationship or family, right. or child, really. So they're not seen as proper, heirs or whatever to the shrine and to that duty. It's a little bit vague, but it seems like the whole situation, they're not seen as proper, like, offspring.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. They're like outcasts in that way. Mm-hmm. So one day, Izumo and Tsukumo are on their way to school or something, and up come walking this group of Illuminati. Along with them is Gedoin. But there's also this really nice lady, and she's explaining that we're the Illuminati, and we're looking to try to bridge the gap between humans and demons. We want to make everything a world a better place. And we know that your family is very good with demons, and we wanted to come and talk to you and learn from you and help you. And I think Izumo at this point is like, I don't want to have anything to do with you. And she's like, oh, well, here's my card. If you're ever in trouble, you don't hesitate to call me. And at this whole time, of course, Gedoin is being like a real sniveling, evil,
Yeah, everything about Gedoin, he's very obviously meant to be, like, everything about how he's drawn and portrayed and voice acted, like, you hate him. Like, you're meant
to. Oh my God. I hate him.
Slime ball.
Yeah. Hate him so much, especially at the end of this episode. Like, he is going on a list. He's horrible. So, okay. Anyway, we then cut over and we see that Tamamo has gone to go on a little date with her boyfriend, Soji. This is the illegitimate father of their children, but they're not married. And like you said, she keeps like, well, why don't you come back and live with us back at the temple? It would be really nice. The girls would love to see you. And this is when he turns out to be a complete and utter monster, where he's just like, I'm just going to tell you right now, Tamamo, I don't want these kids in my life. And if you keep bringing it up, I'll just break up with you.
Yeah. And Tamamo basically snaps at this point.
Yeah, it's like her mind breaks. And she kind of goes crazy.
She blames her children.
Yeah.
Not even 10 minutes ago, she was doting on her children. And now she's like, it's your fault that I can't have my boyfriend who I had children with. So
she kind of, I think it's a combination to me. It's a combination of the absolute like destruction of her desires of wanting to have a happy family with this guy. And then also she's let the demon in. So the demon is inside her now. And that's probably also affecting her to the point where she's straight up just murdering people now. She's killing people.
So before she gets possessed, she's about to do her dance that she does to like quell the fox demon. And even her two fox spirits, whose names are Uke and Mike, are like, are you okay? Are you sure you're fine? And she kind of turns around and she like has this weird like, grinning smile on her face. And I forget exactly what she says, but she says something along the lines of like, oh, I'm fine, I'm okay, when it's very clearly she's not. And I don't know if it was intentional or if she just didn't care anymore, which is probably a little bit of everything. She didn't succeed. Like, the fox demon took over her. And now it's this manifestation of possessed Tamamo. She was already losing her mind, and now she's got a demon possessing her. So things aren't going well.
Yeah, she goes crazy. She starts killing people, including Soji. I think Soji gets killed.
He's
kind of in a kind of like, if you won't have me, you won't, you know, if no one can have you, that kind of thing.
Can't have you, no one can have you.
Right, so. That's it. Yeah, and so she's just crazy. And then Izumo sees this, freaks out, and doing the only thing she can think to do, she calls the Illuminati for help.
Yep.
So after the commercial break, I'm going to kind of skip a lot.
Yeah, so the Illuminati capture her mom, and they also have Izumo and her sister Tsukumo. They're all in that facility. I don't know if it's the exact same facility that they're in now, but it's a Illuminati facility where they're doing these experiments. And this second half of this episode is where it gets really dark, really heavy. And this is kind of connecting to what we saw in the previous episode, where they're doing experiments on the mom. They're trying to figure out how to merge humans and demons and do all this stuff. And they know that this fox demon spirit family connection that this family, this Tamaki family has, they're trying to use that to their own gain for their experiments here. And they're keeping Izumo and also Tsukumo kind of keeping them around just in case they need them later. Mm-hmm. You know, not for good purposes.
But what's important to note is that among all these monstrous people, of which Gedoin is obviously the worst, but he has, you know, guards and stuff working for him and other scientists. But there's also this woman who actually genuinely wants to do good. She feels like she's protecting the Tamakis. She wants to help them. She's kind of like drank the Kool-Aid of the Illuminati too much, I think. And
it's almost as if like she's probably, if you were to label it, not a good person, but she probably genuinely thinks, oh, if we bridge this gap between humans and demons, that actually will be a good, genuine thing for the world. And like, she thinks this is like literally for the betterment of people, even though it's not. Like, she's very misguided there, but she's not clearly evil.
She's not super evil. I feel like she genuinely wants what's going to help the Tamakis. I don't think she's in as much into knowing what's going on with Gedoin. That's the way I took it. I could be wrong, but
I'm just sort of assuming that the whole reason why she's there at all is she thinks that their mission is just in some way and maybe she doesn't even like, she's not as sadistic as Gatoin. Like,
but I don't think she's all that sadistic either, because her name, by the way, is Yoshida, we learn. And she realizes at one point just how bad things are going to get. She must have come across Izumo's mom.
And she, there's also a point in this episode where she was looking at like files and stuff she wasn't supposed to be.
Yes. So she kind of sees, oh gosh, Gatoin's really going, doing some really terrible stuff, to the point where she actually gets Tsukimo and like sends Tsukimo off secretly to like an orphanage. Yeah, to an orphanage and get her out of there so she'll be safe. She's like, stick with me, Izumo. I'll protect you. I'm going to get you out of here. You've got to follow me. And to the point where there's a really good scene where I think ultimately proves that she's good, when she's like, I'm going to have to leave and I'll be right back. And then Izumo's like, I don't trust you. Don't lock the door. And she's like, okay, I won't lock the door, but you have to stay here. But Izumo doesn't. But the proof is that she didn't lock the door. So she really is doing good by Izumo. She's trying to protect her and keeps to her word, doesn't lock her in that room. She lets her escape, even though she didn't want her to. Izumo, at this point, she's been betrayed by her mom. She's being betrayed by these people who are trying to help her. She doesn't trust anyone. That's why we get the title.
That's why she is how she is. Yeah.
Yeah. And even when she was young, before her mom went crazy, you know, she didn't have a dad in her life who didn't want anything to do with her. And all the townspeople were afraid of her.
Yeah. They were kind of outcasts. Yeah.
Yeah. In every way. So she just doesn't trust anyone. Even this woman who is in this moment genuinely trying to help her. But unfortunately, as Izumo's escaping, she runs into a room and finds Yoshida has been caught by Gatoin and his men. And yeah, he pretty much is just willing to just kill her right now because she's a traitor.
Well, what happens, like this whole scene was I don't know if moving is the right word, but it was like high emotion everywhere, where Izumo was caught. Yoshida was caught, and Gatoin basically has some sort of vial with like his experimental research so far. And like, I need someone to test this on. Will this do this? I don't know, this fusion of human and demon, like, will it work or not? I don't know, but I need a test subject. I'm going to do it on you. And she's freaking out. Yoshida is, she even says like, don't put that in me. She gets injected by this serum, whatever it is. She kind of like writhes on the floor in a very unsettling way. We like don't even see her face. We just see her like legs kicking around, and she dies. Like, it didn't work. And of course, Gatoin, being just like the emotionless scientist, is like, oh, well, that's too bad.
I wouldn't even call him emotionless. I think he was reveling in it.
Yeah. Well, I meant sympathy.
Unfeeling.
Yes. He's just like, oh, this human being just died. Oh, well. Like that actually, yeah. If anything, he's upset that his experiment didn't work more than the person died. He's just like, well, no, that experiment didn't work. Let's keep going.
He's also like, well, at least I got rid of that traitor, you know, it's just like the worst.
And I'm trying to remember exactly what happened here, but Izumo's mom is still being experimented on, but they basically acknowledge that she can't be experimented on forever. And that's where, of course, Izumo comes in. And they don't know where Tsukimo is. She's been sent off for adoption somewhere, but they said they could find her.
They do. It's revealed in the like the very last moment of this episode that like Gatoin has learned through some file somewhere in their system that.
Oh, that, I missed this.
Yeah, that where he's like, oh, it looks like he was trying to protect her by putting her around the orphanage. I'm just going to have to pay that orphanage a visit. Is what he says, something like that.
I remember them saying that we could find her, no problem. I didn't remember that they actually did.
I'm pretty sure they did. I mean, maybe I'm like 80% sure he said that. Well, I got the impression that it wasn't even a question about them having her. Like, I think they don't have her yet, but they're going to, is what was implied. To the point where, like, it was enough of a threat that Izumo was like, okay, I'll do this. If you to protect my sister, I will do whatever you want. And that's what she says out loud. But then you hear her inner monologue and she's like, I'm going to kill everyone in this place.
Oh, yeah. And it even does this. I'm trying to remember. It shows like a face that like when she's talking to herself, like she is.
Yeah.
You know, she's on a revenge tour. I was actually thinking kind of like almost like Uchiha-ish. Like the only thing she cares about is this getting revenge on this guy. And you know, this was when she was 11. Like, how old is she in the present time? Like 16,
probably.
Yeah, 16, 15 to 17. She's high school age. And so like, this wasn't that long ago, 4 or 5 years, really. And so she's been spending the last 4 or 5 years, you know, at the school, you know, I guess training to do what she needs to do so that she can, I don't know, pretend, or like she's doing this on the surface to prepare for what Gedoine wants her to do, even though that's not what she actually wants to do. But of course, the whole time, this is why she's always been so standoffish, and like, there's no point for her to make any friends or to trust anyone for everything that we saw here. Mm-hmm. So like I said, kind of Uchiha-ish, you know, I'm not saying she's Sasuke, but you know, kind of similar, like the friendship stuff here is not the point. That's not why I'm doing this. So
she's
I have another reason here. Yeah, so, and also, it's also worth mentioning that one thing I was curious about was this whole episode is framed in the way that the fox demon that Takuma, or whatever his name is, Takara, found in the previous episode was, like, explaining this to the characters, right? Like, they're all hearing this, is the way I'm understanding
it. Yeah, this is all a flashback,
Yeah, well, but all the characters like Rin and Yukio and Shemi and all that, they're hearing all of this. So they're like getting this information. Like they're learning about Izumo's backstory with us. That's how it's framed. Because that fox puppet demon thing was explaining it to them. I'm still curious, like, what Paku told Shemi, like, under her breath. Like, was that a piece of information that's separate? Is that different than what we're learning here? I don't know.
Kind of feels like it. Yeah.
Because like if this fox demon is just explaining everything to the whole team, then whatever Shemi learned from Paku is kind of pointless now, because like we're just learning it all again. So I'm kind of curious, what did Paku tell Shemi? Like, and is that going to come up later? Like, is that something that we don't know yet? I don't know. But anyways, I'm assuming in the next episode it's going to like flash forward again to the present time, where our cast of characters are all now understanding, like, oh, wow, this is what Izumo's been through. We had no idea. And what do we do now? So, because they're hearing all of this, right? If I'm understanding this properly.
I think so. I believe so, yeah.
Because there was some narration during this. I remember there was some narration during this episode, too. Like, for example, there was a point where it said, like, Tsukimo had no friends when she was 11 years old. Mm-hmm. And that's basically the fox demon explaining that to all the other kids. So...
yeah, this was an amazing episode. It really, really justifies all of Izumo's actions in the series up to this point. Like, it all makes sense now. I totally get her character now. She is Tsundere, and this is why. And then at the same time, I am just chomping at the bit to see this Gedoine guy get his just desserts. I mean, I want to see him thoroughly, thoroughly defeated at some point. I'm sure we're ways off from that.
And hopefully Izumo gets to do that.
I don't really care how it happens. I just want him to totally be utterly defeated beyond. I want him to he probably will never realize how much he deserves it. But man, this guy is horrible. And it was really frustrating too, because there was a part in this episode where he's like, well, okay. So earlier in the episode, they're like, this is the mantra of the Illuminati. We want to create friendship between demons and humans. But then when Gedoine's got her down, Yoshida down on the ground, he's like, now recite the true goal of the Illuminati. And she, I guess, admits in this moment that the true goal of the Illuminati is to wipe out humanity and demons. She says something to that effect, that the true goal of the Illuminati is to destroy the world of the humans and demons, or something like that. It was very weird. So he was like talking to her, like, is like, I've been put in charge of this place by Lord what's his face himself, and Lucifer or whatever. Yes. Lord Lucifer trusts me to this. And I'm just thinking to myself this whole time, is like, is Lucifer this bad too? Or is this just Gedoine? I don't know. But regardless,
we've only seen Lucifer once, and he was the first one who explained this kind of human demon world merging.
Yeah,
when we saw him on that little helicopter pad or whatever. I'm assuming he'll come back up later.
Oh yeah, so, for sure. But like, the question I have is, Gedoine running this facility illegitimately, or is he got the full support of Lucifer to do these horrible things. That remains to be seen. But regardless, yeah. he's terrible and he's horrible. Yeah. And like the fact that there could be like a woman like Yoshida here who genuinely is a good person and has been duped to a certain extent, or maybe misled, or maybe I don't know what her deal is, but regardless.
I think if Crocodile is here, he might say, well, the fact that she's with the Illuminati at all means she can't be good. Like, she had to join them for some reason.
Yeah.
That probably wasn't, you know, the best of interest. But I would say at best she was, like, misguided. Like, maybe she thought, like, the Illuminati had, like, good intentions in the end. But
or maybe she had
obviously.
Maybe she turned heel. Maybe she saw what they were doing to the Tamakis and was like, oh, no, this is too much. You know,
and
that
kind her of conscious,
thing.
Her conscious, like, jumped back in like, hey, what are you doing? So
yeah regardless, it's just like the contrast between this woman trying to save this child versus this monster who is just like reveling in killing. It's just like, oh my god, I hate this guy.
But going back to Izumo, I think it does help. Like, if you go back to the last season with Izumo, she didn't do a whole lot, but like when she was saved by Shiemi, she was almost like disgusted by it. Mm-hmm. And if you didn't know it without the context, you'd be like, I actually kind of thought this, like, Izumo's kind of an asshole.
Yeah,
like,
agreed.
Like, why do you show like no gratitude or anything? And it's like, with this context, it's like, okay, maybe I get it. Like, your whole life you've suffered in some way. And like, you have other things that you are concerned about that are way more important to you personally, that I can understand why she would basically. She up to this point, especially with Shiemi, the other female character, she's been basically refusing to have that friendship happen, and now you kind of know why. So that context helps.
Yeah, it's basically like, I don't want you to be my friend. I don't want friends because they always betray me, they always turn on me, or something to that effect. That's just how she was raised, to believe that people were against her and that she can only rely on herself. So... yeah, great episode. I assume you agree. I mean, I don't know.
Honestly, if I had to pick like Blue Exorcist episodes, like individual episodes, like what is the best Blue Exorcist episode? This would probably come to mind. Obviously, recency bias now, but like, I don't think there was an episode nearly this strong in season two that we just saw, right? No. Bond's backstory wasn't as someone joked. That this was kind of felt like a One Piece backstory. Like it wasn't this severe.
It did.
Nothing with Bond's backstory was like this, you know, emotionally draining. And then like season one, there's some stuff with, you know, the main characters obviously there that I have to think about. But this episode out of the whole series so far, I think is up there as like arguably the best one. So
I'm a little biased too, because I like Izumo as a character. So having this like explanation of her true feelings about things and her worldview just makes her even more interesting to me as a character. And I like that they played the long game with her. Like, she was designed to be this way for a reason, and now we've learned why.
It would almost be interesting to watch the first season and see, like, does she just come across as a typical, you know, standoffish high school girl, or, you know, it'd be interesting to see. With later context.
Yep. Okay, well, let's finish out the episode with One Piece. One Piece, episode 746. The numerous rivals struggle against themselves, the raging monsters of the new world. The final episode of the Dressrosa arc is here. Finally.
Hooray.
So, quick rundown. Everyone is leaving aboard Orlumbus's fleet. And there's a brief scene where Robin walks up to a Law who's just sort of looking out at the sea. And asks him, like, what's next for you? And he's just sort of like...
he just walks away. Yeah, he does. I actually was wondering, like, this scene was... So One Piece has a lot of chatter. Characters are talking all the time. And this scene was actually kind of interesting that, like, Robin walked up and there was actually like a little bit of silence, and then she started speaking, and then there was a little bit more silence, and then Law doesn't really say anything but kind of walks away. So it kind of like stuck out to me that it was a little different than most One Piece scenes where characters can't shut up. So the way I interpreted this was Law obviously took out with help like this long, lifelong nemesis that he was after this whole his whole life basically in Doflamingo. And he's not done yet because his whole original goal was to, you know, take out the Wano guy. Kaido. Like, what's his name? That dude. Like, that's his ultimate goal. We haven't done that yet. But, you know, this is obviously a huge part of his life. And we saw it got his backstory and everything. And now it's like, Robin seems to have realized this. And it's kind of like, well, now what, Law? You know, trying to be, you know, I don't know, a voice of reason or a voice of comfort, maybe. But Law doesn't really take it. He just kind of says nothing and then walks away.
Well, he says, like, leave me alone, is what he says. Yeah. But then it's just like he doesn't want to talk to her. But then Robin just kind of chuckles. She's like, okay.
Yeah. Like, at least she was observant enough to, like, realize that he might be struggling a little bit inside. Like, you know, or not struggling may not be the right word, but kind of, like, listless. Like, well,
yeah,
this lifelong mission of mine is complete. You know, you might feel a little bit empty after that, even if it turned out mostly in your favor.
Oh, well, she was definitely trying to comfort him because they know the story. I mean, it was told to them. So, yeah.
Well, the fact that she was even observant of that, she's like the only character that would be.
Yeah.
Like Luffy wouldn't treat it like that, and no one else would. So. Right.
Meanwhile, we cut back briefly to Dressrosa. We see that, you know, there's some mysterious figures running around. It's CP0. They're doing some snooping. We see Rob Lucci. We see the nose guy. Yeah. We even see Spandam.
Yeah, I actually didn't see Kaku. Someone mentioned Kaku. He's the giraffe guy, right?
Well, he was there. Yeah, he was in shadow. You saw his nose.
I didn't see him. I must have looked away. I remember seeing Lucci and I remember seeing Spandam. Like, oh, those two.
Missed Kaku. It started with him. He was in a room and he was like on a transponder snail talking to them, and you just saw like his shadow. So you could see it was him because it had the goofy nose.
Oh, okay. And someone mentioned in the thread a very pertinent question, like, wait, didn't Robin break his neck speaking to Spandam? So like, yeah, didn't she? He's like, well, he got better. Well, he broke his... He was all bandaged up or something. So like,
yeah, he still was.
Yeah, so he's still around, but maybe that injury from 2 years ago is still lingering.
I will tell you this. I forgot that he was here because I really don't remember him. Like, I thought he was gone. So when he showed up in this scene, I was like, wait, what? So anyway, that was weird. I wouldn't expect him to stick around because I don't think he does. But obviously, CP0 is a big part of the world government. So they're you know, important. So then we get the narrator. We get a little dance from what's her face?
Violet.
Yeah, Violet doing like a Spanish dance to music. And everybody, the whole kingdom is like, oh, well, it's time to start rebuilding. King Riku decides to publicly announce that, you know, a relationship between their country and the Tontadas.
Yeah.
Everyone's rebuilding the city, and the narrator is saying what's going on. They're building these big statues of the Straw Hats and Kuros.
Yeah, it's Luffy, Kuros, and Usopp.
Yeah, and Usopp's like a goofy face. Like, he's like,
yeah, it's the face that he made when he knocked out what's her face? Sugar.
So, yes,
that goofy face.
Okay, so then we cut to a really interesting scene. We see first it's Fujitora and Senku, they're having soba. They're on their marine ships on the way. They're leaving Dressrosa now. But then we cut downstairs and we see Suru is keeping watch on a chained up Doflamingo in a cell at the bottom of the ship. And I'm not going to say everything he says, but let me just say that Doflamingo is just excited to see what's going to happen next in this world. And he says he knows something about the world government, that if he told them, it would change the very nature of the world. And he has a warning that he gives her about this.
And he basically is talking about how, like, the seat of power is open. You have the emperors, you have the warlords, you have the worst generation, and, you know, kind of just hyping up. It's almost like hyping up the viewer. Like, there's a bunch that could go down here. Like, this is a very dynamic point in time, a very volatile point in time, that, you know, be ready for everything to go down here, basically. Who knows what?
I will tell you this, knowing what I know now that's happened in the One Piece story, this scene is very interesting, and that's all I'll say. So we get to the commercial break, and we come back, and we see it. We get cut to a quick shot of Captain Jack and his crew, and they are warning them. They're like, oh, there's a Marine fleet, but I don't know if we can go after Doflamingo and Jack. We hear Jack, and he's like, you think I can't take those Marines? We're going to get Doffy. It's something to that effect.
Okay.
And yeah,
I don't know who this is. I mean, I know this scene, but like, okay, I don't know. I'm not sure if I remember this guy or if I'm supposed to know this guy, but some guy wants to save Doflamingo, and I remember this. But
all we know is there's somebody named Captain Jack. We see their Jolly Roger.
Yes.
And that's basically it. So that's all you need to know. Then we cut to a much weirder scene, much more lighthearted scene. It is Bartolomeo showing off his ship, the Going Luffy. What do you think of this ship? I'm curious.
I think my favorite part of this whole sequence was he's pointing out different parts of the ship, and he's like, this part looks like the mess of the Going Merry. Don't you recognize it? And my thought in my brain was, yeah, that looks like the Going Merry, but they gave it angry eyes. And then, like, right as soon as I think that, I think it was Zoro mentions, like, it has angry eyes.
Yeah.
Like, just basically saying what I was thinking, because it looked like the Going Merry, but rather than like the big, just round open eyes, it had like the slanty, you know, angry eyes, like how you think of it. Like, oh, okay, I'm not the only one who noticed that. Zoro noticed that too. So,
yeah.
And then it's like, he's got like a part that looks like Chopper's, like antler or whatever. And just, yeah, just very fanboy. I think somebody even calls him a fanboy at this point.
Oh yeah, again, they do. The characters, like, do. Yeah.
Again, it's not just me or the viewer thinking this guy's a super fanboy. Like, in universe, people are like, "Wow, this guy is kind of a crazy fanboy." So that is what he is.
It's the figurehead that's just the real, like, eye roller. The big Luffy with his long arms, like, going back. It's just like, oh my god, it looks so stupid. But anyway, yeah, that's his ship. And he's got his whole crew, and they're all fanboys as well. And they've got a surprise for everybody. First, they show off the fact that all of the Straw Hat Fleet members have been given pieces of Luffy's Viva card. So now they can find Luffy if they need to in the future. Everyone has a copy of it, or a piece of it, I guess.
Yeah.
But more importantly, they've gotten news. All the Straw Hats have gotten new bounties. And they start showing off everyone's new bounty posters.
I don't remember exactly where the bounties were before, but Usopp's
The new images there. Too. Everyone gets new pictures. Yeah,
yeah. But Usopp's is high now.
Yes,
he's like,
well, he's got Usopp.
Right, got Usopp.
That's the name on the poster.
Well, actually, he was on the poster before as Sniper King, but now he's Usopp.
Yeah, I think now that he's might called be... God Usopp. Yeah.
So, like, I wonder. Like, I guess that's slightly, you know, maybe important, because before he was Sniper King or Soja King on the poster, but now he's Usopp. So, like, okay, he kind of changed his name. Yeah. By the way, I don't think Chopper and Luffy still realize that Sniper King and Usopp are two separate people. And then Sanji has a real picture now, which, you know, at first is just kind of like, oh, okay, he's got a real picture now. But it seems like there's more to it, because he's only wanted alive. Yes. Like, they realize who Sanji is. Now, I know through osmosis that there is, like, this is all I know. There is a future arc that features Sanji, like, that he's important in. That's really all I know. And I'm assuming this is related to that. Like, whoever does these bounty posters must have realized, before they just had this weird drawing, so they maybe didn't realize who Blackleg Sanji was. But then maybe now that they realized, oh, Blackleg Sanji is that guy, we need him alive. Why? I don't know, but they realize something, and that's why he's wanted to lie. That's my guess. So now he's got a real picture. There is a kind of a joke in this episode where Nami's poster, like, she's just like Black Cat Nami or whatever. Yeah. She's posing, and they're like, when did she pose for her wanted poster? Like, how does that work? Like, yeah. Someone who knows she's wanted Like, here, I know you're wanted and I could turn you in for money, but let's just take a picture of you. Like, it's not really supposed to make sense, but she's
well,
like,
it, no, it's a jokey thing. In there's a joke character in One Piece that's been talked about by Oda. I can't remember his name, but like in an SBS, readers had asked him, like, who takes the pictures for the wanted posters? How do they get these pictures? And I think Oda kind of jokingly responded, well, there's this character. His name is this. And he goes around. He's a photographer and he takes pictures of people. And apparently this character has never shown up in the lore of One Piece. But all the fans, including Oda, kind of treat him as like he's canon. And that, like, apparently he takes the pictures on the wanted posters.
So he doesn't care about the bounty itself. He's just like, I'm just here to take your photo. And I guess
he's a photographer.
Nami,
yeah.
Nami decided to pose, like, just a very model type pose, right? So
yeah, and to be clear, the wanted posters are generated by the world government.
Yeah.
So what they say and the bounty amounts and all that stuff, that's world government deciding those things.
Yeah.
So, but the joke is there's this character, I can't remember his name, but it's like a joke character. He's like, oh, that's where the photos come from. And I guess it's kind of playing into this idea that, like, when Nami had her picture taken, that guy must have been there posing for him, you know?
Yeah. And then Brooke's poster is just like his performance poster. Like,
yeah.
It's not even a wanted poster, really. It is, but it's just in the style of his, like, you know, his come to see my performance type poster. Just for fun. Why not?
Yeah, he's the Soul King.
And then I think the only other bounty thing worth mentioning is Frankie is a little bit upset that he's not at 100 million yet. He's at 96 million.
Oh, yeah, and Usopp's higher.
Yes. Usopp's like third highest, I think. I think he's even higher than Sanji because it's Luffy, Zoro, Usopp, I think. I mean, not that it matters that much, but he's high because he just somehow worked his way up.
I think Bart says it's like he's like, and we only got the new posters for you guys because you guys were going crazy in Dressrosa. But the rest of the Straw Hat fleet also got their bounties increased by 50,000 berries or whatever. So
except Chopper is still at 100. Poor Chopper.
Well, is he 1,000? I think he's 1,000.
I thought it said 100.
Oh, maybe. I don't remember.
His wanted poster is like Cotton Candy Love and Chopper. Like, okay, yeah. That's what you have.
But yeah, the big takeaway is the Sanji poster. That's the one that's like, that's odd. And then I also thought it was funny too that, like, as he was introducing them, Bartolomeo kind of says, "Oh yeah, and Law, you got a new poster too, and you got a higher bounty, but I'm not going to talk about that because I don't care about you," you know?
Yeah.
And yeah, that's pretty much it. That's the end of the arc.
Oh, there was this guy at the end of the episode that was like on his ship, and he was like, I called him the steaming guy because he looked like he was just he wasn't on fire, but he looked like he was hot and smoking and steaming.
He was eating rocks.
Oh, okay. And I bet this guy is super important.
Yeah. Doesn't he look super? And he had some like long arm guy standing next to him too. He looked really important too. Okay. End of the joke. The joke is not a joke. It's the freaking filler people. So
there's like a four episode. I don't know if it's like a filler arc or just a series of filler episodes that we have to go through here. So, all right. Cool.
Oh, it is only four. Oh, good. Thank goodness. It's only four. Okay. Yeah. The Silver Fortress arc is what it's called. So
does this like tie to a movie or anything, or is it just a random arc?
Well, you know, I don't know. I don't think it does, but it might they might be side characters in a movie, but they're not the main characters in the movie or anything. I mean,
yeah, it's just they've done this before where they have a few episodes that like lead into a movie or advertise a movie.
Maybe.
I don't know.
I don't know. I don't remember this at all. I have zero memory of this filler arc. So
watch it be weirdly well animated.
Maybe.
Sometimes that happens. Or I don't know if it's happened with One Piece, but I know it's happened with Naruto where you have like filler, not all episodes for sure. Definitely not. But sometimes you get like a random filler episode that's just like weirdly Sakuga. Like, I don't know. They just want people to watch it. I don't know. I don't know that. I'm going to doubt that's going to happen, but who knows?
Yeah,
it is what it is.
Yeah. Well, I'm curious to see if we just go right into it next week. I'm assuming we do.
Nope. I can check the Adult Swim schedule.
Yeah, and people were saying in the thread, like, the next several arcs are fun. And, yeah, I mean,
not as long.
Well.
As Dressrosa.
No, I don't think so. The next arc, definitely no. Next arc is actually pretty short.
Well, I know the Wano arc is long. I don't quite know when that happens. I know names, like there's Whole Cake arc in there somewhere.
Yeah, that's the second one. And that one's long, but it's kind of like it's in parts, so it doesn't feel as long. But yeah, Wano also is in parts, but Wano as a whole is just like, it's the longest arc that's ever been.
Oh, so I'm looking at Adult Swim's schedule. First of all, this is kind of interesting. I don't read a whole lot into this, but I'm on Adult Swim schedule, and for Dragon Ball Daima, it actually says, quote, Dragon Ball Daima season 1. Like, wait. That implies there's a season 2. But the thing is, none of the other shows say season 1 or season anything. It's just Daima. So it's kind of a weird thing there that it just says.
Well, that's just a goof because there's not going to be a second season.
No, I know that. It's just weird that for some reason, out of all the shows, that's the only one that says season 1. But yeah, for One Piece, it says the Silver Fortress, Luffy and Bartow's great adventure. Luffy and Bartolomeo's hunger lands them in a trap set by a silver controlling pirate lord. So apparently, yes, that's what we're watching next week.
Okay. All right. Only 4 episodes, so. Maybe it'll be so bad it's good. I'm trying to think, did I skip it? I might have skipped it and just gone straight into the next arc.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, it's the sort of thing you watch for, like, maybe a hate watch. I don't know if that's too hard, but, like, you just watch for shenanigans. Like, you don't, like, you kind of understand, okay, this is filler junk. Let's see how stupid it gets.
Yeah, it's kind of cringe because you're just, the whole time I'm just thinking, what are they going to do? Because they can't do things that haven't happened yet, you know? And so it's always like, well, what are they going to do, you know? Anyway. I will say that there was one arc in One Piece, the one where they go to like the vacation island, the mechanical vacation. I thought that was kind of fun. And then there was also the one where they went to, there's one One Piece arc that I think fans really like, which is the one where they go to that marine base.
Yeah, that's I remember that one early on. People thought was fine.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it doesn't tie into anything else, but it's like, okay, it's not the worst thing. So. I remember that one actually.
Okay, well let's do some flavor alerts.
Play flavor alert.
Potential award nominations.
I have an obvious one, or maybe not an obvious one, but I think we've seen enough. We can put Izumo Batomaki as best character. I feel like she's at least worth a nomination here. So, like, obviously we have more to see with her yet, but it's very obvious that like she's gotten a lot of focus on the season. We got a whole backstory and everything. So,
well, while we're doing that, I'm going to go ahead, even though it's early, I'm going to put Gedoin in as a best villain.
Oh, yep.
He is hateable.
Yeah, definitely. I wouldn't put him in like worst character because he's meant to be hateable. Like, this is succeeding. Where worst character, I think, is, you know, like we have in there, we have Diamante, who is like, he was just a bad villain. Like, Gedoin is a good villain because you want him to fail and he's like, you hate him. Like, that's succeeding. Yeah. So that's the right category.
Yeah, he's giving me like visceral vibes of like, I can't just someone punch him, please. Yeah.
Best character design, Gedoin. Joking. I'm sort of joking, sort of not, because like I think his design helped him in like portraying him that way, but also like best character design is more positive, like intonation or positive you know, connotation, not hate him. So let's see what else. Nothing in Dandadan or nothing in a Dragon Ball, I think, this week. Dandadan. Nothing. We have the two main characters just nominated in Dandadan. I don't think Ira has quite elevated herself to be nominated yet for best female character. Not yet. She's fun and she had a little bit of growth in this episode, but I don't think she's really elevated to being best, like a best character nomination yet. Mm-hmm. And there's really no moments necessarily in this episode though.
Like, I'll tell you, we don't nominate for this, but Dandadan is up there for best cast for me as far as like.
Oh yeah, overall. We have that category, which is that everything's nominated. So
yeah, but that's like it's a standout. I mean, mm-hmm. These are great characters. No, I don't know.
Let's see. Anything in Bleach? Best fight? Not like, is that, was the Renji versus Master Masculine fight even good enough to be nominated?
Not for me. I mean,
we already have a fair number of nominations for that.
Okay.
See, I'm going to have a hard time remembering Mashal at the end of the year, which is, I know, we don't have that many months left.
Glad we wrote it down.
Yeah, exactly. We'll have to remind ourselves that. But yeah, do we have Bleach. Yeah, we have three Bleach fights on here already. Yeah. And I think all of these are stronger. Yamamoto versus Yuhabaha.
That's my favorite.
Was great. Yeah. Ichigo versus Yuhabaha, and then Kenpachi versus Unohana. Those are all stronger nominations. So I don't think that fight today or this episode elevates there. This episode of Blue Exorcist was good. And if we had a best episode category, like we talked about last week, I think we would nominate there, but it doesn't really count as a moment.
No,
I think, do we want to nominate Izumo Flashback as a moment? Like, I'm trying to find our moment category.
Best moments. Yeah, we don't have any. We have one Blue Exorcist in there right now. It's the when Rin confronts Bon and loses control.
We have in the second season when Shiami rescues Rin also. Which, like, I remember that was sort of a weak nomination. We're like, yeah, it's good enough. Like, it was, I remember it, and it was a nice moment. Do we want to put the, like, Izumo's flashback being a whole, yeah, let's just put it. Why not? I think it's kind of cheating because it was a whole episode, but.
Yeah. Well, it's mostly that end scene to me more than anything.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Okay. I was thinking, is there any, like, standout powers and abilities in Bleach or in Blue Exorcist? I don't think so. They're all kind of pretty generic so far. They're okay, but nothing amazing. Anything else?
No, I think that's good.
Okay.
Like, obviously, this is a big Izumo episode, so we got her as the character in the moment. So,
alrighty. Well, we'll wrap it up here then. That'll do it for episode 443. Thank you for being here, Seda.
Yep.
We'll be back next week for 444. Again, same lineup, although we are getting pretty close to that changing. So look forward to some new information. I do wonder if next week, when we get episode 11 of Dandadan, if we will learn what replaces it or if it's continuing. Maybe we won't get that till the following week when it's on its final episode. I don't know, but
yeah,
stay tuned. And until then, later.